freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
You want to go to the Seahawks game? All right, give me one more screen.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines studios.
I would put very little stock in what Brock Hewitt has to say.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app.
Salk, the third time in 2 days, is flat out wrong.
And 710sports.com.
Good morning, everybody. It is Brock and Salk on 710 ESPN Seattle and on 710sports.com, 710 Sports app. What's up? Everybody have a great weekend. That's about as good as sports weekends get, man. Seahawks Thursday night bouncing into a four-game sweep for the Mariners. Tiger in the chase yesterday. A great PGA Championship. What a weekend, man. They don't get too much
better. Soggy's back from Vegas.
Oh, I was
Vegas. Got Vegas stories to share. Got a tease. You can't wait to pay off.
I got to tell you, our whole 8 o'clock hour is going to be fantastic. I've got a bunch of rapid-fire questions, including a few about Vegas and the thing that has changed my Vegas life forever.
Mm.
We are going to... Can we even tell people who we're going to be joined by at 8:30? Lydia, do you think we should tell people, or should we just kind of do it?
Like, could you give like an increasing amount of hints? Could you drop some hints? Like spoiler alerts? Pay them off?
Can you give a hint? Like what? How would you describe this person without giving it away? I don't know. I feel like he's so famous and so fascinating that any hint might give it away. We'll think about it. 8:30 today, big guest. And Will Disley will join us at 7:30. But let's start it off, man. The Mariners sweep in Houston, man. You got Oakland on tap tonight. Only a game and a half back. Brock, you apparently saw it coming on Friday. And you might be the only one in the universe.
Yeah, Maniac to calling out the universe. Maniac, I love his tweet post-game saying, yeah, go ahead, raise your hand if you saw this coming. And welcome to just the game of baseball, man. Just when you turn on this team, just when you think they were eight down heading into Houston. They were eight back of Houston and three plus back of Oakland. And then all of a sudden, instead of being double digits, totally out of the American League West, you sweep them. You're four back, you're game and a half back of Oakland, and you control your destiny. And I don't know, is this the biggest series that we have seen since? And you can go back to 2016, but that was not, they didn't control their destiny.
Yeah, probably.
Oakland was totally out of
maybe
it.
Maybe 2014, right, when they came right down to the end as well. I mean, like, we've had a couple of years like that, but this is going to be in that.
But certainly not in mid-August, and certainly not with the fifth best record in all of Major League Baseball. Their record, the Mariners, better than anybody in the National League, better than Cleveland. It's just Oakland. You know, it's these teams we talked about all year. It's Oakland, it's Houston, it's Boston, New York, and it's you. That's where you're sitting. That's in the rarefied air that you're sitting. I don't care about your run differential. And now you get the Oakland A's in their building controlling your destiny, and you win the series. You sweep the series, you come out, and you're right back where you've been most of the season, leading or second in the wild card.
There are moments in most great seasons that everybody remembers and goes back to and says, okay, that was a turning point moment. Obviously, you know, you have three games leading up to yesterday, so I don't know whether yesterday will end up being one of those moments, but I got to say, cut two here, when we look back at this thing, if the Mariners do complete this and find a way to make the playoffs and come from behind and take down Oakland or maybe Houston, who knows, I do wonder whether this will be one of those defining moments of this season.
The windup and the 1-1 pitch. Swing and a fly ball into left field and deep. Tucker going back to the warning track to the wall. Goodbye, baseball. Into the Crawford boxes. Ryan Healy has tied it at 3-3 here in the top of the ninth inning. His 22nd home run of the year. And Ryan...
Yeah, it was down to the wire. You had blown the game on a bunch of cheap hits in the eighth inning, right? I mean, that was not a badly pitched inning. Pazos gives up a hit by pitch, and then you get an excuse me single and another excuse me single and a sack fly. I mean,
and it was not Colome, who has pitched every single day, so he's going to have the day off. We thought Diaz was going to have the day off. You sat there and you wondered, you're up 2-0. Felix is warming up in the eighth, and I don't know about you, Mike, but me and Kyle, and I'm sure Lydia, Howdy, all of us on the edge of our couch, is Felix going
to
come in?
I was just trying to figure out who that was pitching without the goatee. Who was that? Oh, it was Nick Vincent. Like, who is that guy? I didn't even recognize him out there without his goatee. But you're right. You're wondering whether Felix is going to come in. You give it up. You're down 3-2. You're down to your final out. They haven't, as many times as we've seen them come back over the course of a game, I don't know that I've seen too many of these final out, home run. No, I mean, that is one of those moments that you remember. And then to finish it off in the next inning, I mean, that is special. Even more special to do it against that jerk Osuna. So all of that just kind of comes together for the Mariners. That is a big-time sweep and a big-time win. And the resolve that they've shown... It also makes me wonder whether it took them a couple of weeks here to kind of regroup and get together after the trade deadline. Whether, you know, you had some changes, some new bodies come in, some new arms, some new personalities. You're going to see Robinson Cano as of tomorrow, which is crazy. Whether it just took them some time to kind of reset themselves and, okay, who are we? All right, this is who we are. Let's go forward.
Correct. You could drive yourself absolutely batty trying to figure that out. Or, Mike, was it changing the lineup? Was it just putting D and saying, sorry, man, it's just not going the right way here. And whether you got a hurt toe or ankle, as Danny thinks he may have, you're just not going to hit leadoff anymore. This has not been a bad week or a bad 2 weeks. It's been a bad month of baseball. And you know what? We've got to mix some things up. And you put Mitch Haniger in the leadoff spot. He goes off with 9 hits and 5 doubles and home run. He just plays out of his mind. And or you also finally say, sorry, Felix, you're just not entitled to this spot in the rotation again. And you take two kind of preeminent players on your team that have done an awful lot in baseball, but you're telling the team, hey, after a month here, you're just not going to be handed anything, you know, and we're willing to do whatever it takes, not for an individual, and not that we throw you guys to the side, all right? Felix, you're still going to be with this thing. Indeed, you're absolutely still going to be a part of this thing, but we're also just not going to hand you your position every single night. Was that some of the catalyst to get it going down in Houston?
I mean, it's baseball, so who the heck knows? You could have done all those things, and Erasmo gives up 8 runs yesterday,
correct,
and so it wouldn't have meant a thing, but all of those are certainly possibilities. And I support all the moves. The only thing is, you know, until we see Felix pitch out of the bullpen, right now he's just sort of an extra body that they're carrying. That, I mean, I think I would have rather seen Bradford's gone right now, right? Yep. I mean, I think I would have rather seen Bradford.
Casey
in
Lawrence
there.
Was the only other one left down in the bullpen.
Yeah, I mean, I think I probably would have rather seen someone else, but this is where you're at right now.
Well, Eddie Diaz felt the same way as you. He wasn't about to see anybody else.
No,
don't tell me I've got an off day.
He was very clear in cut six that the second they took the lead, he wanted to come in and pitch.
I thought I would feel tired today, but you know, I was feeling good. You know, they told me I got day off, so I do a bunch of stuff here in the clubhouse before going to the game. When I get there, I play catch. I feel my hand good, so you know, I was then. I told them I want to be off today, but when we tied the game, I changed my decision and told Brian I can't pitch tonight.
I love that. And even Scott Service explaining it as well, sitting in the seat that he's sitting in, trying to patch this whole thing together. And how am I going to do this without Colome and Diaz, who have carried us to so many of our wins? Yeah, I like Scott Service saying the call came to me in cut five.
Well, it means that team's in a really good place, you know, when the closer goes down. And you know, we've run him hard this year, but he understands what this, you know, opportunity today to win that ball game, what it means to our team. And it says a lot about him and the kind of the tight unit that we have here. And it's been a struggle. You know, it hasn't been easy here for about a month or so, but to see this team kind of get it turned around, and this is kind of the feeling we had early in the year, which timing couldn't be any better.
Yeah, I would agree. The timing couldn't be better. That gets a lot of respect in the room, too, man.
Has that happened much?
Guys call down like that?
Yeah.
I'll tell you, I've generally heard complaints about the opposite, and the first time I ever heard that was in the Mariners clubhouse, the visitors clubhouse, as it turns out. I was covering the Red Sox at the time, and the Mariners were in town, and I think I can tell this story now. I remember sitting down with J.J. Putz, who I didn't know, but he was nice enough to grant me an interview, and I was sort of chatting with him afterwards, and we were talking about Rafael Soriano, who I thought was one of the filthiest relievers. I mean, that kid had ridiculous stuff. And I was asking about Soriano, and he just starts shaking his head. He's like, pfft. I'm like, what? He's like, that punk doesn't pitch. Like, you know, the second his arm doesn't feel 100%, he's out. I've pitched 5 days in a row. I got to get run out there again because this guy doesn't feel like pitching because he's not perfect. I was like, he unleashed on me. Yep. And, like, I didn't know him. I was a visiting reporter, so, I mean, there was no reason for me to do anything with it. But I learned that day that, like, you know, just
it
because
it could go the other way.
Yeah, just because somebody's got good stuff doesn't mean it's good in the room. And when you see Edwin Diaz, as great a season as he's having, take a risk by saying, yeah, I don't care. I feel good enough. I've kept my pitch count low.
Yep.
I'll go out there and even throw a couple of ground balls at the end in order to make sure I keep my pitch count where it's supposed to be.
Phenomenal.
I think that is huge in that room.
Phenomenal. You could just see Service too yesterday as he enters his press conference after the game, obviously excited about the win and healing, everybody coming back. He was just waiting though, and he was like, you know, the best part when your guy calls you and says, Skip, we take the lead, I'm in. Like, I want the ball. Like, enough of this. We're not going to give this thing away. As tough as this month has been, and to do something we have never done, have never come into Houston and taken four in a row in their building.
And as good as that is, how about what's on store? I mean, we can talk about the sweep over Houston, but now, I mean,
let's go.
As you said, this is the biggest series of the year in Oakland in that dump of a stadium. Go get them. 7:10, time for Need to Know.
Need to Know, the voice of Seattle sports.
Brought to you by VenueKings.com.
Here's what you need to know up first.
What a weekend for the Mariners as they beat the Astros 4-3 yesterday, 10 innings, and they complete the four-game sweep in Houston. Ryan Healy down a run, two outs, bottom of the ninth, going yard to tie it up, and then Mitch Haniger won it with a double in the 10th. Edwin Diaz calling down to say, nope, I got to pitch, even though I've already pitched three straight. And he becomes the first player since 2004 to record four saves in a single series. A lot of talk about how it's the first four-game sweep of Houston. I mean, the Mariners have only played so many series against Houston, let alone four-game series. But still pretty remarkable, and the timing could not have been better for a group that had its back against the wall.
Yeah, this has become Eddie Diaz's season. And at every single turn, he continues to impress. His level of dominance, and maybe we'll get into this in the 8 o'clock hour, as Gary Hill and others tweeting yesterday just about his numbers. When you just look at the raw data of what he is doing right now for this team, there's a good case to be made that no closer has ever been as dominant in baseball as what Eddie Diaz has done. The fact that they have not lost a game when they've had a lead after 8 innings this entire season, they join, well, actually, the Oakland A's in that category. I think these are going to be three pretty highly contested games with the A's. But who would have ever thought you could go to Houston and win four? The way the last month of baseball has gone, Skip mixes up the lineup. He gets production at the back end. They close out these games. And in so doing, they're just a game and a half back now of Oakland.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
By the way, lost in that is that Erasmo Ramirez went 5 innings and didn't allow a run yesterday. Pretty impressive. Mariners now begin a 3-game set with the A's tonight in Oakland. Marco Gonzalez on the mound. All three games, of course, on 710 ESPN Seattle. Pregame at 6 tonight. Game time will be just past 7. A's hold a 1.5-game lead over the Mariners for that second AL wildcard spot. They have played unbelievable baseball, and these two teams have been on a collision course for each other. Tonight will be the first of 10 games left against the A's. You got 3 in Oakland, then 4 in Oakland in a couple of weeks, and then 3 here in Seattle near the end of the year. And those 10 games may very well determine which of these two teams is in the playoffs.
Yeah, speaking of a historic run, that's what the A's have been on as well since mid-June when the Mariners had that gigantic wild card lead. This has been as much about the Oakland A's playing just out of their mind baseball, the best baseball in all of the major leagues, as it has been about the Mariners and some of their struggles. I love the fact you're going to see Marco, you're going to see Paxton, and you're going to see Mike Leake. I just love how this sets up right here. Marco coming off a rough start in Texas. I don't think anybody is willing to put it out there more of what these games mean, the opportunity that he has. I really hope he's not wearing down here as his inning totals creep up higher than they ever have in his career. But I know this, he's going to be excited to get the ball tonight. And the Mariners 6-3 against Oakland this season have got to keep that rolling.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, it didn't go down the way all the Fairweather Tiger Woods fans wanted it, but Brooks Koepka does win the 2018 PGA Championship yesterday. His second major this season, also won the U.S. Open, and his third in his last 7 major starts. He did not play in the Masters this year. He has been unbelievable, looks and acts like Mike Trout, hits the ball a mile. He's a machine out there, and that may not be all that much fun, but it was a little bit more than Tiger had yesterday. Tiger was magnificent, making a charge, but also falling apart and swearing at his club near the end of the round. That's sort of how it goes. And look, we'll talk more about it. I just don't understand the Tiger phenomenon. Not that I don't understand why he's such a big deal. I don't understand people who don't watch golf but watch Tiger. I don't get it. I never will. And I love to hear them get all excited when Tiger makes a big charge. And then they always seem to disappear the moment Tiger falls apart. Go figure.
The ratings will once again be huge. They're going to be the biggest in the PGA Championship. And I don't know how long. I'm just spitballing that because they haven't come out yet. But I know that that's going to be the case. Because I know from hours 2 o'clock p.m. to 3 p.m. yesterday, I could not move off my couch. And my button got flipping back. My flip button got real busy yesterday going between the Mariners game and one heck of a comeback and their first sweep in Houston, a 4-game set, and flipping over to Tiger, making an unbelievable charge, making birdie after birdie after birdie after birdie, putting himself in position, and even, you know, for the fun of it, making a birdie on number 18, yes, after the bogey on 16, but a second-place finish all by himself, sets up for 8 great months of conversation for the game of golf heading into the Masters. The Tiger is indeed back, and that is good for golf.
All right, there you go. Those are 3 things you need to know every single morning at 7:10. We'll talk a little more about that throughout the day. I you know how I feel about this. We've talked about it a million times.
I know.
And then watching the bros in the crowd, like jumping up and down after Tiger hit that great shot, the approach to them.
Well, I think there was a shot.
It was really that shirt, yeah. Nice and ironed, yeah. Out. Give it a couple snaps.
There
snaps.
It is.
I think it was our guy.
The Tiger Bros.
I think it was our guy Ravel that tweeted a picture. There were 200 people, of course he counted them, and 198 of them had their phones out.
Yeah.
There were only 2 like watching, truly taking in the moment. But isn't that what it is?
They don't care whether Tiger wins. They just want to say, "Oh, I was there at hole 13 when Tiger did this." Like, cool. You had a great experience. I don't know. I don't get it. Whatever. You can listen to the show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealers. I'm sure all you big Tiger golf fans are going to be texting in to tell me what a jerk I am and how I don't understand. Fine. Go ahead. I don't care. Let's talk to the professor.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Song.
If you want to take care of him, take care of him now. The price is only going to go up.
Every morning at 7:15.
He's too important to let go. You're not trying to
totally break everything down.
Plus. A wild card.
What magic trick would you like to be able to perform?
I can maybe try to have you disappear. That could be nice.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Salk.
Good morning, John.
Good morning.
How are we doing today?
Doing well. How are you?
We're fantastic. There's so much going on. We had the first full weekend now of preseason football. Who looked good? Who looked better than expected? Who looked worse?
Are you talking Seahawks or league?
You can decide.
Well, I think on the Seahawks side, I think you have to really look at the rookies. I mean, that draft class looked real strong in the opening game. You can see that from all the way down from Rashad Penny, who may not have gotten yards, but he had 3 nice runs, to Rasheem Green, who really did well. Michael Dixon was ridiculous punting, so you thought that looked good. Saw some good things out of the Rams this weekend. Did not see good things from Josh Rosen. He struggled, and it looks like the offense of the Cardinals struggled. Their defense showed some promise. San Francisco, you have to put them in that loser category because they suffered 6 injuries. Six injuries, and then on top of it, Jarrett McKinnon, their starting running back, he got a knee injury yesterday, so they're down 7, and a lot of those guys may not be back until the start of the regular season.
And that would be the gigantic one. If that is a ACL or something significant to McKinnon, they are banking on him, right? I mean, they let other people go. They're banking on him as being a perfect fit in that system with the quarterback, with the play caller. Do we have any news of that when the timing
It looks like it's an MCL, so that's probably going to be 3-4 weeks. So probably won't do anything the rest of the preseason, but should be there for the regular season. And yeah, you're right. I mean, they can't afford to lose him. I mean, he's so valuable in the way that they run the football because, you know, they want to try to go outside, inside zone, and he's so good at making cuts. That's what I saw on Monday and Tuesday. And so losing him could be a very big blow. And then their backup, Max Breida, who is actually doing some good things, he got hurt. So yeah, they're down 2 running backs right now. Richard Sherman did return to practice on a limited basis, you know, coming off that hamstring injury. So he's trying to work himself back into the lineup.
Hey, remind me, John, didn't we see the most trades we've ever seen at the end of training camps last year because the cut down day changed and everybody was cut at once? We had an enormous amount of trades. Do you foresee that happening again?
100%. You were already at 70 trades this year, and there was, I think, 93 the total of last year. And so I would imagine they're going to get over the 100 mark probably by September because, you know, what teams are doing now is that they're being shorter and keeping their draft choices. And so if the draft choice isn't working out, they'll get rid of them after the 3rd and 4th year. I mean, even if it's going to be a 1st-round pick, I mean, they'll dump them for a 6th and 7th-round pick, you know, knowing that if there's a limited chance that they're going to put a 50-year option on them. So, yeah, I think there's going to be, you know, an exorbitant amount of trades.
What do we make of C.J. Procise? I mean, he looked very C.J. Procise-like on Thursday in that he was not in the lineup once again. What is the future for him?
Shaky because his availability is the key, and he's not been available. I mean, he goes through the entire OTAs, the mini camp, and all the 12 practices or so, and next thing you know, here he is hurt again. And so got a hip injury, didn't practice yesterday. And so where he was probably sitting in the number 3 hole in the backfield, I'd have to think he's dropped back to 5 because, I mean, you look and you see Mike Davis did some good running on Thursday night. J.D. McKissic is so valuable because of his speed and his flexibility, both on returns and also in the backfield and maybe even at wide receiver. You'd have to put him in the number 4 hole. And so then in the case of Procise, it's almost like Alex Collins of last year. You know, Alex Collins was 5. They cut him. He goes to Baltimore. gains 973 some yards or so. I mean, you kind of figure that you can maybe get some limited trade value for Procise. But again, the fact that he's always hurt is not good.
Anything to read into Pete's comments yesterday about Earl Thomas? I don't know if you heard them or not. He was asked if anything's changed, and he quickly said no. Anything to read into that?
No. I mean, it's the same. I mean, there's not going to be any change in this unless he comes in. All he's going to be doing is losing money, and they're going to collect every dollar of that. I mean, what's he up to, $800,000 now? He's already gone past the 15 days, so he's lost $475,000 of his signing bonus proration, and now it's just heading into the $40,000 a day keeps adding up. So there's no change in regards to that, and you know, until some injuries start happening at the free safety position, there's no trade that can happen.
Who do you think's the kicker for this team?
The kicker, I think right now it's going to be Janikowski, but I still say Jason Myers. I don't see, he's not missed one. He's been really good at the kicking, so I think it's an even competition. You still worry a little bit about Janikowski's hip, but I know yesterday was his kicking day, and he seemed to do pretty well. Michael Dixon's doing well with the holding.
I got to tell you, I had the game on DVR, so I didn't watch it until last night. Janikowski looks ridiculous in a Seahawks uniform.
Let me just tell you,
he looks ridiculous.
I think Titus said the funniest thing he's ever said to me. He goes, because Titus watches these games like Kyle for like the unique details. He's like, did they pick up Janikowski's jersey at Big Five Sports?
Like his, it looks like. I'm with Titus. Yes, it was just untucked. It didn't fit him. Like, everyone else has skin-tight jerseys on the sleeves. His is, like, sewed open. Like, what is the deal with that?
Seabass is a little different body.
He does his own thing.
He is a unique human. All right, let's do a little wild card.
Time now for the wild card.
Wild card. Mr. Professor Clayton?
Yes.
Which is a better breakfast spot? Denny's, IHOP, or McDonald's?
Oh. You probably, well, see, now the question is, how do you do IHOP? Because now it's what?
That was all fake.
That's all fake?
Yeah, they did that as a whole stunt.
It's a hoax.
Yeah, it's total hoax.
Yeah, it was funny. I was driving by the IHOP I thought IHOP. IHOP.
No, it's IHOP.
Over here in Renton, so that was just a joke.
Yeah,
just then a total IHOP. Joke. You go IHOP.
Yeah,
okay.
I go IHOP. I mean, you know, Denny's in certain ways, I mean, they tend to
Grand Slam?
Yeah. What's that?
The Grand Slam? The moods over my hammy?
Yeah, but again, I mean, some of the places aren't as good as they used to be.
I see what you mean. Yeah, IHOP is on the rise.
When was the last time you ate breakfast, John? You tell us you only eat one meal a day. When was the last time you had a full breakfast?
Yesterday.
Oh, you did?
I do Sunday mornings.
Oh, on Sunday morning? Sunday morning. Good for you.
Change it all up.
Right on, kid.
All right, John. Thank you. We'll talk to you tomorrow. John Clayton, his show coming up, of course, at 10 o'clock this morning. Wow.
Sunday morning brunch
with the professor. Yeah. Sounds kind of fun.
Sounds like an auction item.
Yeah, who wouldn't want to go get a chance to
yes.
do that? Yeah, Janikowski looked ridiculous. I was laughing out loud because the thing about the Seahawks uniforms,
yes,
they make everyone look sleek.
Yeah, they do.
Like,
tailor.
They're super well tailored. They're very sleek. Like,
and by the way, that was super well tailored. Janikowski asked for it to look like... No, I'm not joking.
Come on.
It had to be. Otherwise, it would have like hung down to his knees.
That's right.
It would just perfectly sat right at the waist.
Correct. He absolutely 1,000% had that tailored by the equipment staff.
Right. Well, I know that. But also the sleeves being open. That was the part that bugged me out the most.
Sure.
I mean, I know that's the way people used to wear it in the 80s.
Yes.
But like to see the sleeves open and like the loose fit, it was bizarre.
Titus.
I have not seen anything
like
that.
Where did they pick up his jersey? Dad, did you notice that?
Another weird question. Maybe I'm crazy. And Brock, you're not the one to ask because you can't see color. Was the little, like the bright green on the uniforms, is it like a little bit brighter this year than it was in the past? Am I crazy?
I didn't notice that, but
right,
maybe, I mean,
either.
Doesn't mean you're crazy, no.
All right. I mean, I might mean that I'm crazy. I'm also apparently a jerk and a Tiger hater and a bunch of other stuff. Yeah. Let me be clear. I don't hate Tiger Woods. It's the people that like Tiger Woods that I specifically have a problem with, not Tiger himself. We can talk more about that later. Let's do it after we talk to Will Dissly, Seahawks tight end. 270-pound monsters drawing comparisons to another Seahawks great of old. We'll talk to him next on Brock and Salk.
This is Brock and Salk.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Bouncing around today as we discuss a great weekend series sweep for the Mariners, who get back to it tonight against Oakland. We'll discuss this one coming up in a little bit here, Brock, after Blue 42. We got some Vegas stories. And we got Will Dissly sitting down with us right now, Seahawks tight end, joining us over here at Seahawks camp. Good morning.
Good morning. Nice to have you.
What'd you think? Your first NFL preseason action on Thursday night.
Yeah, it was a blast. You know, CenturyLink was rocking, and
You know, wish we'd have got that win, but you know, I had a lot of fun running around there, putting the Seahawks uniform on for the first time. It was a cool deal.
I obviously did not ever experience that, but you and Brock share something. I mean, you both went to UW and then immediately were drafted here by the Seahawks and played here. And all I ever hear is that the speed of the game is the biggest difference between college and the pros. Did you notice that on Thursday?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, I think the speed from college to the NFL. You know, guys are still fast, but where it's different is every guy is fast.
Yeah.
That's where you see it. You know, the nose tackles run, you know, sub 540s, so it's insane what they can do, and there's crazy good athletes out there, but, you know, at the end of the day, it's still football.
Did 88 feel better than 95?
98,
whatever that was.
Yeah, it's just a number, you know. I don't know. I guess maybe it has a slimming effect.
Yes.
But, you know,
it does, actually. I will say it has a slimming effect. When I would see you in college with 98, you look like, you know, kind of burly. And then I see you now with a number in the 80s. Like, oh, that guy looks like a tight end.
There you go. There you go.
That's we're kind of numbers guys. Is that weird?
Yeah. Like,
is it really?
Kind of weird.
You don't think there's a lot of numbers guys in the locker room that just look at it and it's really important? Because guys spend serious dough.
Oh, yeah.
When they come to a new team, they got to have that number.
Oh, yeah. Sweezy came and he got his number from Roos, and I think there's a few dinners exchanged there, but it's a big deal. But, yeah, you know, for me, it's just a number. You just go play and what you got on.
Do you have you had yet a welcome to the NFL moment?
Yeah, actually, I think it was the first day we had pads on. We were 9-on-7, and we ran power, and I had my first solo block and kind of got stood up in the holes, a little different than college. So that was probably my moment. Nothing like, oh, I got thrown into the sideline. But, you know, it's been a blast. I've had a lot of fun, and, you know, each day making new mistakes, making new plays, it's been awesome.
We've heard the story of how, you know, you were playing defensive line, you end up in drill, you're catching some balls, you make the transition to tight end. Do you think you could be here in the NFL as a defensive lineman? Could you have made it this way, the other way?
That's a good question. You know, obviously would need two more years of college just to perfect my craft and see what would happen that way. But there's no doubt. I mean, if Coach Pete Carroll needs me to run out there at D-line, I'd be happy to go do that.
We've seen some guys do that in this team.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen guys
Will
play.
Will Tukuafu played like 18 positions.
Absolutely. I mean, would you know what to do if they threw you in there on defense?
Just go hit somebody.
D-line's really not that complicated, right? Go right, go left, try to go forward, see what happens.
Hey, have you chatted with any of the fellas over there on Montlec?
Yeah, I got to go over there and watch practice, and you know the guys are looking good, man. They fly around and just almost just as up-tempo as here at Seattle. So, you know, it's good. I'm excited to see what they can do.
You think Coach Peterson prepped you for this place?
You know, Coach Peterson is all about just making sure you're the best version of yourself. I mean, you know, whether I'm here or if I was at another ball club, I think, you know, just instilling that confidence, that self-determination to be the best person you can be, I think that would prep you for anywhere.
Isn't that a little bit of what Coach Carroll does in this building?
Absolutely. It's an easy transition for me. You know, it's all about competing. It's all about finding that one thing to improve. And so that was cool. It was a really easy transition from Coach Pete to Coach Pete.
It's interesting. They don't have very similar personalities, especially with the media. But some of their messaging, I wonder how similar it is.
Yeah. The one similarity is that they're very personable. You know, they really care about their players, and, you know, they want you to be successful, so they're going to figure out a way to make you be successful.
How's that tight end room been here?
But who's better dressed before we're done? Coach Pete or Pete Carroll? I mean, one guy's got – I mean, we know when Coach Pete was here, was it last year, Kyle? He had
Coach
his,
Peterson, yes.
Coach Peterson. He had his, like, specially designed – what was that? It was
Mr.
Like
Rogers sweater cardigan.
He had a special UW.
It was like a Gore-Tex cardigan.
Yes, it was a Gore-Tex UW sweater cardigan.
Yeah.
And then Pete's got the Air Monarchs and the khakis. So
I think it's two different types of swag. I mean, it's like it's apples and oranges. You know, they're both great in their own respect.
How's your tight end room?
Oh, it's a blast. You know, it's a cool group. You know, a lot of veterans. You know, Ed Dixon and Nick Vinette's been here for 3 years, so it's cool to have that experience. And then, you know, it's just a lot of hungry guys, you know, a lot of guys that are ready to prove themselves. And, you know, the cool thing is we're all making each other better. So it's awesome.
How much does Ed Dixon have to offer in terms of learning, been around the NFL for a while?
Yeah, I think, you know, Ed, for me, is just all about instilling confidence. You know what I mean? Like, he's like, hey, I've been around. I've seen it. You know, you just got to do this and do that and stay focused here. And
That is just, it's almost nice to have a veteran, but okay, you know, he's been around for a long time. He obviously knows what the right things to do are. So I'm just trying to just take anything he says in.
When we saw Ed Dixon for the first time, Brock and I, we just saw him walking around out here. We were awfully impressed just by his physique. You've been in this weight room now for the first time for the last few months.
Yeah.
How different does the weight, does the experience in the weight room seem than it was in college? Some of the things people are able to do in there.
Yeah, I think the difference, I mean, in summer, we're not even allowed to be at the facility. So, I mean, a lot of guys are training on their own. So I haven't really got to see guys peak out here. You know, a lot of in-season lifts are, you know, make sure your movements are correct. So I haven't seen anything like put up like 400 hang clean or 600 bench or whatnot. But, you know, I see it out on the field every day. You know, these guys are impressive. They're throwing guys around. They're running to the ball. So you see it more on the field than in the weight room.
Who's impressive?
Frank Clark, I mean, that guy has an unbelievable get off. And I mean, even Doug Baldwin, you know, what I saw in OTAs, and even Russell Wilson can, you know, he spins the ball like no one can. And, you know, he gets out of the pocket and does some really cool things. So it's been fun to watch.
Yeah, Will Disley here with us. It's interesting, Will. I'm thinking back to my rookie year in 1999, not in this facility. We were out in Kirkland, and the O-line coach was kind of a crusty old guy named Tom Lavott. He was awesome. Crusty in the most positive way. He'd been there, and he'd done it. And he talked a lot to the rookies about, in college, when you double-teamed, you could mow people, you could move to the second level, you could dominate somebody at the collegiate level. This level, against grown men, it's really hard to move them, to truly move them off their spots. Much more about technique and making sure you've got them covered up. Have you felt some of that? I know it's only one preseason game, of just the difference of blocking grown men at this professional level.
Yeah, I think that's some pretty good advice right there. I mean, you know, what I've seen is it's more about the details and less about, hey, you're going to crush this guy. So it's your hands have to be in the right place. They have to be there first. Your steps have to be clean. Your base has to be clean. And, you know, these backs that we have are unbelievable. So all you need to do is give them a crease, and they're going to hit it and do some special things.
You said Russell could spin it a little bit, huh?
Yeah. I mean, all the quarterbacks are doing great. I mean, Alex Magoo, the rookie, showing some good stuff. And, you know, even AD, with all his experience, he's doing some cool stuff too.
What aches? You've been out here for a couple of weeks now. From what hurts?
He's a rookie. Nothing hurts,
yeah, nothing
right?
Hurts.
Nothing hurts?
I don't believe you. Just keep going.
I don't believe that. Something hurts.
You got to lie to yourself, you know, push through it when the times get hard. But,
come on. Your hands have to hurt. Something has to hurt.
What can hurt? I mean, you know, I'm in Seattle. The weather's great. I'm playing the best game ever, so I have nothing to complain
about.
My
hands hurt whenever I watch an NFL
You're so
game.
Cold out here.
It's freezing out here.
I'm so cold.
It's miserable.
Oh, it's so tough out here being on the shores of Lake Washington.
It's terrible. It's so cold.
You really carry about 270? You play close to 270, huh?
Yeah, I'm probably 265 right now. Wow. So just doing that, I guess.
Wow, and that's pretty comfortable. You like?
Yeah, I feel good. You know, body feels good. I'm in shape and, you know, moving pretty good. So I'm liking it.
Well, it was pretty fun to watch the other night. Congratulations, man. You got to stick right here after a really nice career at UW, and here you are across the lake. It's pretty cool, man. It was fun to watch you the other night.
Thank you. Hope I can make it stick.
There you go. All right, there's Will Disley taking a few minutes with us here on 710 ESPN Seattle. New Seahawks tight end and a rookie himself.
Big man hands, right?
Dude, that's the thing.
Yep.
NFL players and their hands.
Yes.
You know how I always...
Well, you know what it is, too? That's the UW. When you think back to the run of tight ends at the UW, Ernie Conwell, Cam Cleveland, Mark Bruner, all of them, Jeremy Stevens, but especially those Aaron Pierce, those guys in those days had claws just like that. Like, don't shake hands with Will Disley, you know, or don't ask him to shake your hand.
I wanted to do it. I wanted to test it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Oh, I wanted to have the shake so right. I could kind of see what kind of handshake he had. Whether he was going to be a real tight end or not. A real tight end's got a handshake.
Tell me you can't spend 10 minutes with him and understand why Schneider just loved him. Right? Why it was a priority for John Schneider, and then ultimately from a football perspective for Coach Carroll, and he's emphasized that a bunch. We had to have that guy. You have to find, I think Dave Wyman said it during the broadcast, you have to have that why, that true blocking tight end that can own that point of attack.
You know, it's so funny, you know, watching the game on from Thursday night. You know, we heard so much about how they had to have Will Disley, and he looked good. We heard so much about how they had to have Trey Flowers, and I can see why. He's super intriguing. He's probably not ready yet, but you can see what it is that they really like about him, and maybe he'll figure it out. Maybe he won't. We'll wait and find out. Maybe he's the next, what's his name, big tall corner who was awful. But
Therald Simon.
Therald Simon, thank you. The guy who shined is the rookie we've talked about the least, and that's Rasheem Green.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked a lot about Penny as a first-round pick.
It's true.
We talked about the punter. He looked great also. But Rasheem Green has probably received less words spoken, fewer words spoken about him than anyone in this rookie class, maybe Jacob Martin. And yet there he is, sack and a half, getting to the quarterback.
There were those two
nice
starting the first pass rush.
It's amazing. I mean,
yes. Obviously, without Frank and Deion in that game, it was Jacob Martin and Rasheem Green.
Yeah.
And both of those guys did just fine.
Acquitted themselves just fine. All right, Coors Light's Blue 42, as we talk a little bit more football before getting back to the baseball in the 8 o'clock hour. The Seahawks have taught the league something, but is it something the league was really supposed to learn? You'll find out in Blue 42 next. I'm Brock and Salk.
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Song.
Blue 42. Blue 42.
All right, lots still to do today as the Mariners have their huge sweep over the weekend and get ready for a big one against Oakland starting tonight. We'll get back to the baseball conversation here in about 10, 15 minutes at 8 o'clock. And at 8:30, some more baseball. It's 9:30 this morning, excuse me, that we've got. Are you ready for this guy? You've heard about him on this show. You probably have never seen him. You've only heard his voice.
Doesn't even show himself now.
No, he can't.
Because the ladies have been so turned on to him that he doesn't even show his face anymore.
This is going to be a lot of fun at 9:30. Can't wait for that. All right, Coors Light's Blue 42, though, right now, with three good football questions. Brock, you saw the Seahawks game, saw it one way.
Yeah.
The stats people over Pro Football Focus looked and saw what they saw, the scouting folks. Where did you guys agree in your assessment of the Seahawks?
Yeah, that's Justin Coleman, was the best defensive player on the field. Rasheem Green was right there. He was highly, highly productive, but Justin Coleman was all over it. And when you see a guy, especially in the preseason, playing that nickel spot, just being hip-to-hip with everybody, because you're not game planning, you're not scheming, you don't really know what the offense is going to do or what some of their tendencies are, So it really becomes about your speed, your quickness, your instincts. And, yeah, Justin Coleman had the highest defensive grade from the Pro Football Focus folks. And I went back and looked. You realize last year his passer rating against 73.7 out of 31 nickel corners, that was fifth in the game. I mean, that position had become a real challenge area post-2013-14. You know, once Byron Maxwell left, you tried to replace that a number of different times. We brought free agents in. You tried to develop your own. And there just wasn't anybody that was a difference maker until last season. And Justin Coleman ranked number five out of all the 31 nickelbacks. He had two interceptions, both of those for touchdowns last year. And, man, was he all over it last Thursday night. That's a very positive sign. With the inexperience you're going to find at one corner, and even Shaquille in year number two, to have a guy you feel good about in the slot is very beneficial.
Would you want him as the other corner?
I just don't think that's not his game.
Yeah,
I don't think that whether it's his short area quickness, whether it's his ability to play the run, whatever it is, he likes to be locked into that slot area, and he's very adept at it.
All right, question number two. Going around the league, which rookie quarterback shined the brightest on the first weekend?
Yeah, Sam Darnold had a really nice weekend. And that's the guy that John Clayton pointed to going into the draft. I felt like, he'd be the guy in this draft that I would take number one. And he came out after a little bit of a holdout, missing some days. He was 13 of 18, 100 yards, a touchdown. But more than that, I actually watched a big chunk of his snaps. Just his ability to manipulate defenders, his calm, his cool, stepping up into the pocket. He had a third down. His touchdown pass, in fact, was a third down play, like third and 17 against Atlanta, and they played some soft zone. They wanted him to just scramble. The rush came. He stepped up. Instead of scrambling, kept his eyes up and threw just a laser dart comeback into the end zone for a touchdown. Sam Darnold acquitted himself very, very well.
Oh, Baker.
Baker was awesome.
Baker looked awesome.
He did. He just looks a little erratic and fidgety to me at times. But he threw some great passes.
Baker was pretty darn good.
I think those two were clearly 1-2. Josh Rosen a little tougher opening. Josh Allen looked lost at times. But Darnold, Baker, very good first impressions.
All right, question number three. The Jaguars, in a lot of ways, are the evolutionary Seahawks. They've taken what the Seahawks did here, and they've tried to mimic it down in Jacksonville. What are some of the lessons you think they've learned?
Well, I found it very curious here. Jalen Ramsey, their corner, Dante Fowler, their defensive end, have both now been suspended for a week. And they're suspended because of their attacks, and Ramsey in particular, on one of their beat writers, one of the local writers there in the Jacksonville area. And that beat writer was filming practice, a big melee fight, kind of like the Seahawks had last year. He posted it, and yeah, Ramsey went after him, and it felt a bit personal. It felt a little bit, frankly, like Richard Sherman going after one of our guys here. And instead of just a slap on the wrist, the Jaguars said, nope, you're suspended for a week. For an entire week, not a practice, but an entire week, we're going to take the thing away from you that you love so much. And it just made me wonder and think, that's not Pete's way. Pete's not going to be that kind of disciplinarian. We talked about that. We compared it to parents and everything else. It's just not the way Pete goes about it. But in retrospect, flipping off your coaches, bad-mouthing your coaches, throwing your coaches under the bus, and just never any repercussion on the field. I wonder, looking back, or if it happens again, they'll do it a little differently. And Tom Coughlin, the crew in Jacksonville, said no. No, we're not going to go down that road. Jalen, you draw a lot of comparisons to Richard Sherman. You're an unbelievable player. You're an all-pro player. But you're just not going to take people down in that kind of manner, especially those that cover this team. You're going to sit for a week. Pretty strong move out of Jacksonville.
All right, there you go. Those are three questions for Brock every day at 7:45. Get a little learned when it comes to some football. As Brock, you did a great job, by the way, the other night. I thought you were awesome.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I got a chance to watch it last night. As usual, I love this. I love your insight. I think you have some really cool ways of expressing what's going on out on the field, and I always enjoy getting a chance to watch you talk about the NFL. Not that you don't do a great job in college, and I know you're comfortable there, but seeing it with the Seahawks and a team that I'm emotionally invested in is always pretty awesome. That said, General Andrew Luck? I know you're better than that.
Yeah, well, I said it Friday. It's one of those areas that probably perfectly defines me. I try to be hip and cool with the kids, but I can't quite get there.
I know. It was
tough. Just like, nah, you're not. Yeah.
Like, I appreciated your desire to reach out to the people out there and try
to. I thought of Mike Heward, like, good try just means you didn't get the job done. It was a good try.
It was a good effort.
It was a good try.
It's Captain Andrew Luck.
I know. Just didn't get it done. All right. Darn it.
It was a good attempt.
I'll take another swing, though.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. That's the best thing about you.
Something like, he gone.
Nice try, Mage. You didn't get the job done.
You're like Edwin Diaz. Like, you want the ball again. Doesn't matter that you got toasted the last time.
With respect to your comments, though, you did, like, promote him, right? Like, that's a step up when it comes to, you know.
It was a good try, Lydia.
Good job. Good effort.
Good job. Thanks, Dad.
All right, we got to run. Coming up next, I've got, I think, 8 or 10 different rapid-fire questions. And if you're not psyched up about the Mariners right now, we're going to make you psyched up. We're going to force you to be psyched up. It's all next on Brock and Salk.